سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. One of the lessons that Imam Hussein alayhi salam has taught us in Karbala, and it is clearly seen in every scene in Karbala, in every drama that unfolded in Karbala, is Ithar. Ithar, to sacrifice what one has for the other, is a quality that, in the words of Hadith, it said that it is the sign of the Ummah of the Prophet. The Ummah of the Prophet, the followers of Ahlul Bayt, are known by this sign. If you want to see someone who is a Shia, then you know him by the fact that he does Ithar. And what makes us great, and what makes us special, in the sense that being the follower of Ahlul Bayt, what makes us special and gain the closeness to Allah, is Ithar. That we do Ithar amongst each other. Ithar is that which adds value to jihad. Ithar is that which adds value to shahadat. Martyrdom itself is great, but when martyrdom is done through Ithar, it becomes greater. That's why you see that the people in Karbala, not only did they do jihad and they gave their lives and became shaheed, but they also did Ithar. They did Ithar and they died. They gave themselves up for others. In their case, Imam Hussein. As I had mentioned earlier, that the lives of the martyrs in Karbala, the value of their lives, the worth of their lives, or the price for which they gave their life, was just to give Imam Hussein a few more hours to live. A life of someone who does Ithar is just like that. That I'm giving my life so that my Imam can have a few more minutes to speak the truth. That my Imam can have a few more hours to live so that he can establish the truth. That he can have a few more hours to live to do what he needs to do. That's how much my life is worth. And if one gives himself for that, then Allah highlights him in history and wants everyone to remember him. This is why whenever we remember Imam Hussein, with him we remember the Shuhada of Karbala. Imam Hussein established his duty and responsibility towards Allah, and the companions established their sacrifice for Hussein, in order that Hussein gets that chance. Jihad, when we look at jihad, we see that jihad is only for men, not for women. One of the ways to attain success in Islam is jihad. And when the hukum of jihad, when the order of jihad came down, it came for men, not for women. And when people heard that if you make jihad and you give your life in shahadat, then you go to heaven without any question. Your sins are forgiven and Allah will take you to heaven without any question. So when the hukum came down and this incentive was given for people to make jihad, so the men were celebrating at the chance of attaining eternal happiness by a few moments of hardship. You know how long does it take for you to die after a fatal blow? Just, you know, you're perfectly fine and then you receive a fatal blow. Maybe a few minutes. Maybe an hour. Imagine this. An hour of pain and an eternity of bliss. I mean, this is a good deal. This is a good deal. Right? What's going to happen? What's the worst thing that will happen? You're going to bleed to death? That you're going to get wounds that are going to give you painful death? Having a head chopped off is very easy. That's like in only a minute. That's all it is. And when you really look at it and you see that, am I not willing to do that for Allah's sake, for an eternity of bliss and pleasure, an eternity of being with Allah? So for the men it was enjoyable, it was a celebration. The men were all celebrating. And the women were looking at the men celebrating. They're asking, wait a minute, how about us? It's a question. It's a valid question. How about us? What do we do? Why can't we get a easy ticket like that? So this question, if you have this question, it's a valid question. And the woman at the time when the hukum and the order came down had the similar question, the same question. They came to the Prophet and they objected. They raised an issue. They said, Ya Rasulullah, I mean, what's this? How is it that the men can go for jihad and attain shahadat and go to heaven? And how about us? How do we go? And then obviously, you know, yeah, since there was no women's liberation movement then, right? But there was a stand. I mean, there were women who came to the Prophet and asked him. So Rasulullah, he said, no, women also have the chance to go. And he said, I'll show you a way. Then he said, I will show you that a way in which you can go to heaven without any questioning. He said, I will show you a way. Okay, men have jihad, they need to go out, they need to fight, they need to battle, they need to get hurt, injured, and then attain shahadat, and then they will go. But women, you don't have to go in the battlefield and fight. He said, I'll show you a way in which you can attain Jannat without any questioning. And that too, I assure you that if you do this, then on the day of judgment, you will be escorted by my daughter Fatima into Jannat. Now, all the women were excited. What is that, Rasulullah? What can we do? What do we do? Right? I mean, the men have jihad. What do the women have in order to do that? And then, in plain words, Rasulullah said that, you know, all you have to do is give up your comfort and your happiness for your family. In other words, Ithar was for women. What do you have? You have your comfort. You have your ease. Give it up for your family, your husband and your children. Go through the hardships of making and giving comfort to them. What is Ithar? Ithar means to give up your comfort in order to make others comfortable. To give up your right in order to make other people's right. Give other people right. Give up your happiness to make other people happy. This is what Ithar means. Give up your own happiness in order that others become happy. This is what Ithar means. He says, if you can do that, then I assure you on the day of judgment, you will be escorted by my daughter Fatima into Jannah. Without any questioning. And this time the men's jaws dropped on the ground. And that's it? I mean, we have to go and actually fight with swords and get killed, and all they have to do is just tolerate us? That's it? Yes, that's it. Imagine that. So, if jihad is for men, Ithar was for women. And Ithar is that which gives value to jihad. This is the jihad of women. Right? This is the jihad of women that we need to keep in mind. It doesn't mean that men should not do Ithar. But you see that in a family life, Ithar is done by the woman who gives up her happiness and her rights in order that the family is happy, that they are comfortable. This is what she does. It's not wajib on her to cook. It's not wajib on her to do housework. But when she does Ithar, she's saying, no, I will do it in order to make others happy. By in order to give others who live around me comfort so that they can do their job. Imagine that. This is Ithar, my friends. Men also do Ithar. Let me give you some example of Ithar when we looked at the men in the Prophet. Prophet did Ithar also. You know how men do Ithar in their family? Tell you that if you send us salawats. You know, Prophet had wives that were such that anyone would complain about if they had them. Right? I mean, even Allah had to reprimand them, right? Allah had to say that, listen, don't bother the Prophet. Don't make his life like that. Don't say these things to the Prophet. I mean, even Allah had to tell that in the Quran to them, scold them. Allah is scolding them, but you see, these wives were such that they were giving a hard time to the Prophet, but you never in his whole life did the Prophet complain about them to anyone. You know, it's easy, my friends, understand this. For a man, If he has to face a world of enemies, it's easy. But if the enemy is at home, I'm telling you, that is what even makes a strong man weak, when the enemy is sitting at home. And he has to go back home and fight an enemy there. This is very hard for a man. Very difficult for him to deal with that. But if his home is strong, if he has a wife who is there, who is strong in her honor, in her respect, then you know what? He can take on the world. He can take on the world without any problem. That's why you see, the ethos of men is that when they have difficulties at home, they deal with it, but they never complain about it to others. When you see the Prophet having difficulties like that, you never saw him coming out and saying, listen man, you know, my wives, you know, it's just a headache, you know, these wives, I'm telling you, well, alright, fine. You never saw him do that. You never saw him do that. See, this is ethos. He's saying, listen, no, I will deal with it. I will deal with it. I will bear it. I will talk. I will handle it. Right? This is ethos, my friend. Imam Hasan alayhi salam. You know, he was poisoned by his wife. He was poisoned by his wife. He was dying of that poison. He was in pain. He was dying of that poison, and his family is around him trying to take care of him. And they're asking him, tell us who did this, tell us who did this. And even till the end, Imam Hasan did not take her name. He didn't take her name. He said, no, I will not say it. Yeah. Why? Because you want to, you know, my enemy's at home, but I'm going to keep that in my house. I will not let others know. This is ethos. You know, keeping the respect and keeping the honor of your wife. This is ethos. So, yesterday we mentioned one element of ethos. What was that element? The element of giving. One has to have the quality of giving. This is the first element that makes up ethos. The second element, my friends, that makes up ethos. What is the second thing that you need in order that ethos is completed? First is giving. And the second element is giving to others. Giving to others. Not Allah. You give to Allah, it's different. But you, when you give to someone else, see, it's easy for people to give to Allah. But when you have to give to someone else, then that's where the problem is. You see, you might be good enough to give to Allah, and there are many people who give to Allah, and they have no problem with that, because deep inside they understand, you know what, Allah gave it to me, so it's His right, I should give it back. I should give it back to Him. And they give back to Allah. But when someone else gets involved, and when someone else has to give, that you have to give to someone else, then you have a problem. Then you see even good people stop and say, why others? Why should I give to others? Why should I give to others? See, giving to Allah, everyone does it. But when you give it to someone else, then it's hard. This is the reason why when Shaitan was giving it up for Allah, he had no problem. But the minute he had to give it up for anyone other than Allah, that's when he became shaitan. He became shaitan when? Not by not making sajda to Allah. He didn't become shaitan by refusing to make prostration to Allah. He became shaitan by refusing to prostrate to someone other than Allah. That's when he became shaitan. You see, this is where you see that people have a hard time doing, my friends. Allah is saying, listen, give it, but give it to someone else, not me. Give it to someone else. Give it to your brother mu'min. Give it up for a believer. That's where people have problems, you know, giving up for others. Why others? You see, it's hard, it's not easy. I'm telling you. And you know, the principle is that just like Allah doesn't like to see any other ma'bud and any other god besides Himself. You know, for example, what Allah hates the most is that when you make someone else as a form of worship other than Allah. Allah hates that. Allah is a jealous God. He doesn't want anyone other than Himself to be worshipped. Just like that, for a servant, he gets this attitude that I don't want to see any other servant other than myself. Why? What happens? Let me give some examples so this becomes clear to you. Send us salawats. So, we have a fundraiser. And it's not a surprise one. Right? It's all set and people are invited to it and you go there. And they're asking for donations. You're going to make a donation. So now what happened? If you made a $1,000 donation, then everyone looks at you. Right? All eyes are on you. 100% attention is on you. Oh, he made a $1,000 donation. Right? Everyone's attention is on you. And you got 100% of people paying attention to you. Now, if someone else gives $1,000, what happens? Right? Then your value goes down half. Oh, he gave $1,000 also, so that's two people. Right? Right away it becomes 50-50. Right? It becomes 50-50. So now what happens, you give $1,000 and you're hoping no one else gives. Right? Because if someone else gives, then you also lose that. So you don't want to see anyone else, because when you give, you see everyone is paying attention to you. So in this way, even giving, you want that then, that I am a giver, I'm a donor, I give. This is what happens. So now, how is ifar now? I just want to give some examples in our life how ifar happens. When do we do ifar? And how hard it is sometimes to do ithar. You sponsor the food for the majlis. You sponsor the food for the majlis. And you give a list of names of Fatiha to read to the Maulana. Maulana, here's the list of Fatiha, please. You know, of your marhumin, right? That's what you do, right? You give a list of Fatiha to them. Maulana puts it in his pocket. He puts it in his pocket. Now the majlis is starting. And instead of taking out your list, he takes the list from last week out. Accidentally. Puts the hand in the wrong pocket, takes out another list. And starts reading those names. And you're sitting over there and says, wait a minute, I didn't give these names. I didn't give these names. Where did those names came from? Now, what happens at that point? What are you feeling at that point? Tell me, what are you feeling at that point? Are you going to go afterwards and complain and say, Mahana, I need a refund on my sponsor food, you know? This was for my marhumin. And here you go on and wear it someone else's marhumin. I mean, will that be your attitude, or will you say, they are mu'min too, let me give it to them. Let the reward go to them. Tell me, my friend, you see, this is ithar. Ithar, when you say that, what, you know, the names that he read are not mu'min? What, they're not believers? Let me give it to them. Alhamdulillah, he read it their names, fine. Understand it, my friends, ithar is not easy. It is difficult. It is difficult when you give up what you have for someone else. This is ithar. If you want to be with Imam Hussein, then you need to have the quality of ithar. If you don't have that quality, you can never be with Imam. You can just claim much as you want. You can never be in Karbala. If you want to be with Imam al-Zaman, then you have to have Ithar in you. There has to be Ithar in you. Are you willing to give it up for other mu'mineen, and saying that, you know, they're mu'min also. For us it's easy, because you know what? When you look at another mu'min, what do you think of him? What do you think of, if something that's coming to you is going to someone else, why are you upset? Don't you see him as a soldier of Imam also? Don't you see him as someone that the Imam is looking to also with love and care and compassion? Don't you see that in them? And why are you getting upset when you see that something that's coming to you is going to him? You should be willing to give it up for them. That's Ithar. Be willing to do that. This is the quality that makes a Shia a Shia. You want to become Shia, then Ithar, you have to have the quality of Ithar in you. That you're ready to give up yourself, whatever you have, for the other. For the other brother, because you are also someone that the Imam loves, and you love the Imam. I'm ready to give myself up, whatever it is for you. And when someone does Ithar, you see everyone can go on. Let me give you an example to explain that. You know, there was an encampment, and in that encampment, you had, you know, like for example, people living in a camp, like for an army camp. There were Shias there. And, you know, in every camp you go to, there are always certain things, you know, that, for example, are divided. Certain chores and duties that are divided. You know, you do this, you do that, you do this. And everyone is doing certain tasks and certain chores, and we go on and with things that we have to do, our purpose and our goal. In that encampment, you know, like everyone has issues in any camp, but one issue they never had in that camp was who's going to do the dishes. That issue was never raised, never brought up. Who's going to do the dishes? Never brought up. And you know what? No one worried. Everyone in the camp, they never worried about it. It wasn't even in their mind. They didn't worry about it so they could concentrate on other things. They never talked about it in any meeting. So, who's doing the dishes? Who's cleaning up? Never. They never talked so they can talk about other things and go on with doing other things that are more useful. Some of these people from the camp were transferred to another camp. They were transferred to another camp. They went to the other camp. You know, like for example, you know, you go from one masjid to the other, you know, in one masjid you see, you know, who's cleaning, who's doing this. Never. It's never an issue. And then you go to another camp. They went to another camp, and the most important issue in the other camp is who's going to do the cleaning and dishes. And everyone is coming on and said, listen, this needs to be equally divided. Everyone should do their own job and their own responsibility. You know, it shouldn't be on one person, it shouldn't be on this. Everyone is fighting each other about their rights and responsibilities, and that it should be divided. And these people who came from this camp are looking at what's going on here. And they say, you know what, I've been in that camp for 2 years and we never had a discussion about who's going to clean up. And here in this camp, everyone is arguing about who's going to clean up. Who's going to do the dishes? Like, why are we talking about this? We never talked about this. We never argued about this. And then you know what? They looked and realized. They realized. Why didn't we do that there? Why didn't we do that there at that camp? Not here. I mean, here everyone's talking about who's cleaning and everyone's trying to say that, no, you should do it also, everyone should do it. There we never had this talk. Why is that? My friend, understand it. Why is that? Then they realized that there are some people who were doing those things in such a way that they never told anyone else that they were doing it. Because of their Ithar, no one had to worry about those tasks. The few who do ifad in the community, they are the ones who make the community run. That others can have the time to do other things. That people can have time to worry about more important things. Let me take care of this. I will take care of this. And I will do it in a way that I will never let anyone complain about it. Right? I will do it in a way that I will never let anyone complain about it. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Now you see what ithar is, my friends. This is how ithar comes about. When an ummah that we have, if we are doing ithar, then you see the ummah can worry about more important things. If in this community, if people are doing ithar, then they can worry about more important things. Others can worry about important things. Things that they could be helpful. And they can do those things. But if no one does ithar, then everyone is worried about all the little things. All the petty things. This is what ithar does, my friends. When you sacrifice your happiness and your right and your things for the welfare of others, you see, it really makes others go forward. The whole ummah go forward. You included, the one who's doing ithar. But the one who's doing ithar, he is the one that is the main reason why the ummah moves forward. Just one more point I will make, and inshallah we will end this subject. There are many other aspects, you know, that I wanted to touch on, but inshallah, you know, sometime else, and you can go online also and see more detailed speeches that I gave on ithar. But just one more point I will touch on, and then we'll go on from there. Not always ithar is about material things, or money, or wealth. Ithar is in everything that you have. Everything that you have. You do ithar. What do? You give it up. You sacrifice it for someone else. Sometimes you sacrifice money for someone else, wealth for someone else, your happiness for someone else. One of the things that you do ithar in is your opinion, your view. You know, your view. Now, to explain that, let me give you some examples first. A principle, and then inshallah understand from there. It is easy to sacrifice your opinion in front of power. When you stand in front of power, it is very easy to sacrifice your opinion. When you stand in front of influence, it is very easy to sacrifice your opinion. You see that happening. There are people, for example, if you listen to a person whose initials are longer than his name, a professor, whose initials are longer than his name, so now, when you listen to him, he sounds more logical. You see, psychology shows that when someone of influence and power speaks, that they sound more logical than others. Now you have one professor who is saying or spewing out garbage. Just some garbage mentality, he's just spewing it out. You're saying, did you hear him, what he said? And it sounds logical. Now the same thing my barber told me last week. My barber told the same thing last week. And he said the same thing. And you look at him and say, you know, look at this barber. You know, he thinks he knows. The same thing is being said by someone who is an expert. And they use the same vision, they're saying the same thing. So now what happens? You see, when you listen to someone who comes with influence or power, the psychology of a human being is to accept it or to think of it as acceptable. What I'm saying is subtle, but pay attention. It happens that you just accept it like that. If you hear something from the member, if you're hearing it from the member, you see, even if I say something illogical, you say that, well, because it's, you know, Maulana who said it, you accept it. You see? If I said the same thing, if I was a normal person and said the same thing, you'd be like, you're not learned. Alright? You're not learned. But because I say from the member, you see, it has an influence of making you accept it. This happens. And when you sacrifice your view for power or for influence, then this is not ithar. You're not sacrificing your view for that. You're not sacrificing at all. You're just being subdued by it. You're being subdued by it. You know, you're just afraid. And he says, okay, you know, it's coming from there. Imam Ali alayhi salam had said, Imam Ali said that the people, he said, there are people who accept what I'm saying, who accept what the Imam is saying without even knowing what the Imam is saying. They listen to the Imam and say, oh, you're only Amir al-Mu'mineen said this, Amir al-Mu'mineen said this, and they're accepting it just because they don't even know what is being said. Imam Ali said, such followers are useless for me. Such followers are useless for me. Why are you accepting what I'm saying? Imam Ali is asking, why are you accepting what I'm saying? The only reason you're accepting it is because I'm sitting on the throne right now. I'm sitting on the member right now. Tomorrow, when I'll be kicked out of a member, will you pay the same attention to me as you're paying right now? Because I am the ruler, you're listening to me. Tomorrow I won't be the ruler, then what happens? What happens? Will you listen to me? In other words, you're not listening to me, you're listening to this throne. You're listening to this member. If someone else gets on the member, if Yazid gets on the member, it means that whatever Yazid says, you will accept also. Because he's sitting here now. And you see what he said happened. It happened. The people who were under Imam Ali, the people who were sitting and learning from Imam Ali, names I can give you. It's not we, but I can give you names. People who were sitting at the side of Ali, learning from him. When Imam Ali is giving the khutbahs, they're learning from him. I give you some names. Shimr, Shabath, Anas. All these people, they are sitting and learning from Ali, accepting what he says, taking orders from him, fighting by his side. Now when Ali is taken away from the member and Ibn Ziyad is put on that member, now they're taking orders from Ibn Ziyad. The same people who are killing Imam Hussein were the people who are learning from Ali, listening to Ali's orders. So what's the use of such followers? What's the use of such followers? This is what Imam Ali is saying. These are not followers. At least understand what I'm saying. Know what I'm saying and then accept it. Know that I am the Imam who is appointed by Allah and then accept it. But if you are just saying because you are subdued by power and authority that I have, then what's the use of such followers, my friends? Allah gives the example in the Quran. Musa, Prophet Musa, wants to learn from Khidr, Prophet Khidr. So Musa becomes a student of Khidr. He comes to him and says, I want to learn from you. Khidr says, you can't. What do you mean I can't? Of course I can. You can't. Oh, I can. You can't. Listen, I am a prophet, by the way. You know that? That's in my resume. You check my resume. I'm a prophet. At least give me that much, you know, that I can learn. Right? I'm trying to be humble here. He's saying that I can learn. You can't. He says, what can't I do? He says, you can't give up your opinion for mine. So what happens? They went through three things. He said, try me. Okay. They went through three things. And you know that. You heard it many times before. They went through three things and Khidr did something. Musa was like, wait a minute, what did you do that for? I thought you don't have an opinion. I'm the teacher here, right? Why don't you sacrifice your view for mine? But what you're doing is wrong. He said, again, you see? Don't say that. And when the third time when Musa spoke up, Khidr stopped it. He stopped the embarrassment and said, listen, I better stop it right now before you embarrass yourself more. Really, you're embarrassing yourself by giving out your opinion in front of your teacher. You want to learn from me, it means that you want my opinion so that it can overwhelm your opinion. And you sacrifice your opinion for mine. That's how it works. Allah said, now you see, if you want to learn, the first thing, if you want to be under a leader, then first you have to sacrifice your opinion for his opinion. You have to sacrifice your view for his view. This is Ithar. Now I just have one question and we'll go to Masaib. One question I have based on this. And then we'll go to Masaib. Tell me, my friends, you heard about Musa and Khidr, right? I'll ask you one question. Well, maybe two. Let me ask you two questions. Who is greater? Khidr or Imam Mahdi? Who's greater? Khidr or Imam of the time? Tell me. Imam Mahdi. Alhamdulillah. Right? Because Khidr will be a soldier of Imam Mahdi. He will be a soldier, foot soldier for Imam Mahdi, right? When Imam will come back. So Imam is greater than Khidr. That's decided. Any doubters? No? Good. Imam Mahdi is greater. Now tell me, who is greater in status? Or lower in status? You can say ourselves, you know, and we are talking about ourselves now. Who is lower in status? We or Prophet Musa? We, right? Are you going to say no? Be honest here. Alright? We are nothing compared to Prophet Musa. We are nothing compared to Prophet Musa, right? Meaning the gap between Musa and Khidr is less. The gap between us and the Imam is greater. Imam is greater than Khidr, we are lower than Musa. And Musa and Khidr in their story, Khidr is saying, sacrifice your view for mine. Imam is asking us the same question that Khidr is asking Musa. Are you willing to sacrifice your view for my view? If you are willing to sacrifice your view for my view, then you can become my Shia. If you can't even sacrifice your view for my view, then it means you haven't started learning yet. You haven't understood who I am yet. My friends, you want to do ithar, Shias do ithar. They give themselves up. Not their lives, but their views and their opinions. Imam, it's yours. Whatever you say. I am a nobody in front of you. I'm a nobody in front of you. When you speak to the Imam, you know what your relationship to the Imam is? You know what your relationship to the Imam is? How many of you washed a dead body? Alhamdulillah, we have some experienced people here. You washed a dead body, right? I washed many dead bodies, and I'll tell you a little bit about washing dead bodies. You know, you stand in front of a dead body and you want to wash him. You can't tell him to turn left or right. Right? You have to turn him. Wash it. Wash it. And then you wonder, man, I can turn you any way I want. I can turn you any way I want. He's completely in your hands. He doesn't have any choice. He doesn't have any opinion. He doesn't have any view. He can't even object to what you're doing. He can't even object to what you're doing. You can do anything with him. The washer and the dead body is like that in the hands of the washer. You see what I mean? You can do whatever you want to that dead body. The dead body will do it. It can't even say, please don't do it this way. It can't even do that. My friends, we are like the dead body in the hands of the Imam. A Shia is like that in the hands of the Imam. Imam, you turn us where you want, we will not object. You make us go where we want to go, we will not object. Just do it. We want you to do it. We are in your hands. This is the extent of the ithar of the Shia of Imam Mahdi. This is who we are. This is who we are. When you looked at the companions of Imam Hussein, this is who they were. Really, this is who they were. When we go to Karbala, this is what we see. You know, today I want to speak about those ladies that were in Karbala. You know, like Umm Rabab, Fatima Kubra, Zainab, Umm Kulthum, Sukaina. I want to speak about them. These women who were in the camp of Imam Hussein. You know, on the night of Ashura, when they saw that war is imminent tomorrow, each of these ladies, whatever they had was their children. Each of these ladies was getting their children ready. And they were preparing them, combing their hair, getting them ready, advising them, and telling them, son, be brave tomorrow. Make your mother proud tomorrow. Are you willing to give yourself up for Hussein? You see the teaching of these ladies. Umm Farwa was telling Imam Hassan's son, Qasim, you know? She was telling Qasim. And you know what? If you go to the place where the encampment was, you see that Umm Farwa's tent was not amongst the Ahlul Bayt. It was outside the family of Imam Hussein. It wasn't in the tent of Imam Hussein. It was outside where the other companions were. That's where Hazrat Qasim's tent was. It is outside of that. The reason because she was not related to him. She was not mahram to Imam Hussein. She was in the tent of Qasim. And she had a special feeling that Qasim, even though we're not in the tents of Imam Hussein, but Qasim, know that you are the son of Hassan. You are the grandson of Ali and Jafar al-Tayyar. Make sure that you make your mother proud tomorrow. Do not run away. Make sure that you are strong. Qasim is like, mother, I know mother. I can't wait until tomorrow comes so that I can show that I am the son of Hassan. This is the ladies who were in Karbala on the night of Ashura. Now when Ashura came, and now they send their children to the battlefield, they're giving up what they have for Hussein. He said, Hussein, this is for you, Hussein. They send their child, and no one looked at it. No one took a second glance at them. They said, go children, we want to see you chopped up for Hussein. We want to see you killed for Hussein. And when their dead bodies came back, they thanked Allah for it. Zainab is making sajda shukr for the martyrdom of Onan Muhammad. When you look at these ladies, they're all doing their shukr and their thank and being grateful for what they have given for Hussein. But a time came on Ashura when Hussein came into the tent to say farewell to the ladies. You know what happened? The ladies made a circle around Hussein and said, Hussein, if we had anything else to give to you, we would give it to you. Hussein, what can we do? We gave you everything we have. We have nothing else we can give you. We want to give you more than that, but we have nothing else to give you. This is how the ladies were. Now Hussein said to them, is that I just want you to be patient. I want you to be patient. Do not show them that you are weak. Do not cry before them. Do not raise your voice. Do not get angry. Do not show them that you have any sign of weakness. Maintain your composure and maintain yourself when you go outside. And you know these ladies, after Imam Hussein was killed, now when they burned the tents and the ladies were going from one tent to the other, now they came to the tent of Imam Sajjad and said, Mawla Sajjad, please get up, my son. And when Imam Sajjad woke up, he said, what happened? He said, tell us what to do. You are the Imam of the time. You want us to stay here and be burned? Or you want us to go out in the desert? In front of the men, Imam Sajjad said, it's wajib to save your life. And so they all went out. But when they went out also, they were careful not to cry, not to wail. They were not crying. They were not shouting. They were not showing fear in their eyes. All they were showing is the fact that these women have never showed themselves to other people. That's why it was hard for them. They never showed themselves to other people. How hard is it for those women whose hijab is so strong and whose concept of hijab is so strong, whose honor is so great that no men have seen them, no men have heard them. Now they have to go in front of these men who are not even men, they're animals. And they went out there without any fear. They went out there. When these ladies were out there, and when these ladies, they get out there and they saw that these men came, and these men, they came and they started snatching everything the ladies had on them. They started snatching everything that the ladies had on them. When they came and they saw that they were wearing veils, the headscarves and everything, they would try to pull those and they would take them from them. The ladies were telling them, what are you doing? This is not the way of human beings. This is not the way of man. This is not the way that you deal with Muslim women. Aren't you Muslims? Aren't you followers of the Prophet? Why are you doing such a thing? But these people were not listening. And when these ladies now, who had now little children, infants with them, their hands were tied. And you see their hands were tied and they were put on the camels, the children were put on their laps. They were put on the camels and the children were put on the laps. And the ladies, their hands were tied and now these camels were made to walk and these children would be hanging and clinging onto the clothes of the mother. These children will be hanging, clinging onto the clothes of the mother. And you know, the mother would want to hold them, but she can't hold them because their hands are tied and they can't hold their children to safety. So now these children, as the camels were made to go faster, these children would start losing their grip on the mother and they would look up, their eyes would look up, asking for help from the mother. And they would be crying, mother, hold me, mother, I'm falling down. Hold told me, mother, the mother wants to do something, but she can't. She's helpless. And she's helpless. She looks into the child. Imagine what she faced at that time. Imagine what did go through their minds and their hearts at that time when they saw the child looking up to them with eyes yearning for help, but they can't do any help. And these children would then fall from their camelbacks. They would fall down, and the mothers would just look at the child falling down. And the child would cry. And all, now after that, they didn't see the child. The child will cry until a scream comes, and the child stops crying. Until the child stops crying, they went through this ordeal. They went through these ordeals. Each of those mothers, how much of her heart was taken by that child? How much of her peace was taken by that child? You see, every time a child would die, all the mothers would just, their stomachs would crunch in pain when they would see the children die under the hooves of the camels. The child would be screaming at the pain from the hooves of the camel. The camel would crush the child and it would die there. From Karbala to Kufa, you see these small graves that are made. These graves that are made for these children who fell down. These women went through that. This is what they went through, you know. And after that, when they were taken to Kufa and Sham, you know that they were taken as prisoners, dragged through the streets, whipped by these men, and they were taken like that. They went to Sham, and when they went to Sham, they faced Yazid. Yazid ordered them to go in the prison. They were put in the prison. Today, if you go to the place where Sakina is buried, that is the prison of Sham. That was the prison of Sham. You know how the prison of Sham was? I'll tell you how was the prison of Sham. The prison of Sham was just walls. There was no door also. There's no door there. It was just an open space. And the women were made to sit inside. It was an open space. The women were made to sit inside there. And that open space, Imam Sajjad would be standing there the whole day in order to tell the people to go away from here. Do not look inside. He would be standing there protecting the women. And he would tell the people, do not look inside. The haram of Rasulullah is here. And these people would go away looking at Imam Sajjad standing there. Imam Sajjad became an icon because everyone who would walk that street, they would see him standing there. He would just be standing there telling them to go away, do not look inside here. This was the prison. There was walls, but you know what? There was no roof over there. There was no roof on top. So now what happens is this, when the day used to come, the sun used to beat down on the woman. The sun used to beat down on the woman. So now the women are sitting under the sun. And the heat would come. And the sun rays would come. And it would burn their skin. It would burn their skin. But you never saw them complaining. And they were not complaining about it. When the winter would come, they would become so cold at night that they were shivering and they would not complain about it. And they went through this weather as it bore down on them and it made their lives hard. You see, they bore down on them and they stayed there for the time they were in the jail. And when they were let go of that place, when they were let go and released from the jail, then what happened? They went from there. They were taken from there. And Neo Zainab said, I will not go for anywhere. First I want to remember Hussein. Since my brother had been killed, I never had the decent chance to mourn for him and give him the respect that he deserves. So Zainab said, I want to mourn for Hussein. So now all the ladies gathered. They called other ladies in the area. They came. And then they had the majlis of Hussein. The heads of the shuhada were brought. All these heads of the children were brought. And they looked at these heads. Every mother cried for her child. Every mother cried and told her child that how she had given him up for Hussein. And everyone after they cried, they went from there and they went to Karbala and made Arba'een in Karbala. Just few more words I will say. Now Zainab is bringing back these women. She's bringing back these women. And when they came back to Medina, it was hard for them. The ordeal that they went through. You see, Medina is the home of Rasulullah. This is the home that belongs to them. This is the city that belongs to Ahlul Bayt. They have a respect here. They have honor here. People respect them here in Medina. Now when they see Medina, after what they have gone through, to come back to Medina, this was an ordeal for them. How can they face Medina? That's why Umm Kulthum, when she saw Medina, to share the poem that she said, is that, "O city of Medina, do not accept us, Medina. Don't let us come inside. How can we tolerate coming inside there now? After what we have went through, and the shame we have been put through, and the horrible ordeals that we had gone through to come back to you, Medina." Now the ladies, they sat outside, and they wanted to come inside. When they came inside, the whole streets of Medina were packed. Everyone was lined up on the street. But Imam Sajjad had given orders to ask everyone, lower their heads, do not see, this is the household of Rasulullah that's coming. This is the household of Rasulullah that's coming. And when the ladies went through that, everyone's head was bowed down and they were crying. For what happened to Ahlul Bayt in Karbala? For what happened to them in Kufa and Sham? They were crying for them. And when Zainab came to the grave of Rasulullah, she went near them. And Imam Sajjad asked everyone to go far away from the grave of Rasulullah. Imam Zainab went to the grave of Rasulullah and said, "Ya Jaddi, oh my grandfather, listen to what happened to us. Listen to what happened to us. Your ummah has killed your grandson by the Euphrates. They killed him thirsty. They did this to us. They did this to us." She went through the whole ordeal. And then she said, "Grandfather, there are men here who are looking at me. Otherwise, I would unfold my sleeves and show you the places where the locket died on my hands." يعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. لا إله إلا يا محمود بحق محمد، يا علاء بحق علي، يا فاتر السماوات بحق فاتر، يا محسن بحق حسن، يا قديم الأحسان بحق حسن. والله give us the توفيق and the blessing to be on the right path. Give us the wisdom to understand your guidance. Hasten the reappearance of our Imam. Make us his helper when he comes. O Allah, increase the love of Ahlul Bayt in our hearts and in the hearts of our children. O Allah, make our feet firm in the path of Ahlul Bayt. O Allah, give the strength in our hands so that we can raise the flag of Imam Zaman. O Allah, we ask you that all the hardships and oppression that is being dealt to the Muslims, give them the tawfiq to deal with it. O Allah, give us the patience to handle the affliction that we are facing. O Allah, those people who are sick and ill here, give them relief for the sake of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. O Allah, those people who are in hardship and problems, help them through the sake for the sake of Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. O Allah, we ask you that ourselves and what we are objectives are and what the Imam's objectives are, help us to see the vision of the Imam and to work towards it. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. Matam Hussain.
Ya Hussain.